This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's the Search Update.
All right, Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you on a Tuesday. We're going to get to Glover Quinn here in just a second. Quick update, the Search Update on the Texans head coaching search and searches around the league. And I would say the big news right now as far as the league goes is from Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network, the Jets are flying in Robert Saleh, Niners defensive coordinator, for a second interview today. The first known finalist for the Jets job. There will likely be others that they meet with in person as well, but I'm not so sure Robert Saleh isn't a guy that if you get him in the building and you can get him in the fold, I like Robert Saleh a lot. I'm disappointed the Texans have not reached out to Robert Saleh. As far as the Texans go, the news, rumor at least, over the last 24 hours is that Jim Caldwell is picking up some steam as the possible choice for head coach of the Houston Texans. And that is a good way to lead into this conversation, as we are joined right now by former Texan safety. He was also a Pro Bowler up in Detroit for Jim Caldwell. Played for Jim Caldwell for 4 years with the Detroit Lions. Glover Quinn joining us right now on Sports Radio 610. Glover, good morning. How you doing? Appreciate you making some time.
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
We're doing great. So let's lead in there with Jim Caldwell. You played for Jim Caldwell for 4 years up in Detroit. Give us some insight as to what Jim Caldwell is like and how good a hire do you think he would be for the Houston Texans?
Man, Jim Caldwell, man, how much time do I have? I could literally speak for a long time on Coach Caldwell, man. He's one of the greatest men, greatest coaches I've ever been around. Awesome for players, awesome for the organization. He's a great leader. I think that's probably one of his biggest intangibles. He's just a great leader of men, on and off the field. And I think, you know, at least for myself, and a lot of the guys that I play with, you know, having somebody like that could, you know, help you on the field, off the field, and really cared about you, it just meant a lot to us as players. And, I mean, you can talk to players that played for Coach Caldwell years later, and they'll still talk about how great of a guy, how great of a man he was. So I got a lot of great respect, great love for Coach Caldwell.
So is he a guy who maybe his public demeanor and the way he stands on the sideline and what have you, is that a little bit different than maybe the real Jim Caldwell or what you see in meetings and what you see in practice?
Well, Coach Caldwell, I mean, he's going to be cool, calm, and collected. You know, he's not going to be one of those guys who's going to overreact to a, you know, he's very smart, very thoughtful. You know, he wants to know the details, wants to know the facts, wants to know the ins and the outs of it. And, you know, that's just him. You know, he's going to be the same way every day. That's the thing I think I like about it, is the consistency, knowing that, you know, he's going to come in ready to work. He's going to come in, you know, leading his team. He's very in tune with his team, and that's what matters to him. His team, his guys, how they're doing on the field, how their bodies are feeling, you know, that's very important to him. I felt like, you know, he treated us like men, and I've always felt like, you know, when you treat guys like men, you know, they'll act like men. You treat them like kids, and they'll act like kids. And that's one of the things that I've always felt like Coach Caldwell did a real good job of. So, you know, what you see from him on the sidelines, you know, he's not going to, like I said, he's not going to overreact to stuff that happens in the game. He's going to stay cool, calm, and collected. He's going to ride the wave. You know, he talks about that all the time, just riding the wave. Your game's going to go up. It's going to go down. Just kind of ride the wave and put yourself in the position to be able to win the game in the end.
We're speaking with Glover Quinn, former Texan safety, also played for Jim Caldwell in Detroit. Tell me about Jim Caldwell's offensive mind and just how he operates, perhaps compared to other offensive coordinators.
Well, I mean, like I said, I was a defensive guy, but from just practicing with those guys, you know, he really talked about and focused on being precise, being efficient, being quick. And that was one of the biggest things. He loved clean practices. You know, people used to always talk about how early we would get off the field and, you know, how short our practices would be. But he believed that if you go out and you practice fast, you practice crisp, you know, you shouldn't have repeats and stuff like that. You out there, your own pace, you're doing what you should be doing. The ball offensively should never hit the ground. And, you know, he learned a lot of that, obviously, from his time with Peyton Manning and Indy. And that's just what he believed. If you're playing and you're moving crisply, it don't take all day. And, you know, he really believed in that. But I think one of Coach Caldwell's biggest things was, you know, I think even offensively, defensively, he just done a great job of empowering his coaches and empowering his players. I think it's one thing to have a coach that feels like they have to micromanage and basically be the head coach, be the offensive coordinator, and the defensive coordinator. Coach Caldwell was one of those guys that was like, you know what, I'm going to hire my offensive coordinator and I'm going to trust him to do his job and allow him to coach. That is why I hired him. I'm going to allow my defensive guy to coach. That is why I hired those guys. And yes, I'm going to supervise, I'm going to manage, I'm going to oversee everything and make sure that as a team, we're all going in the right direction. But I'm going to empower these guys that I hired to do their job. But I think as a player, as a coach, when somebody believes in you like that, when somebody put that trust in you like that, you try to go out of your way not to let them down. And so, in turn, it makes you want to work harder. It makes you want to, you know, do more to make sure you're getting your job done.
Glover Quinn joining us on Sports Radio 610. So, Glover, I'm sure you've been following what's been going on here in town with the Texans, and Deshaun Watson is reportedly disgruntled over perhaps a number of things, including his involvement or maybe lack thereof in this search that's going on right now. They've hired Nick Caserio from New England to be the GM. I think there's a general concern among fans, media, and so forth that this is going to be a Patriots hire that's coming up here. Now, you were in Detroit when you went from Jim Caldwell, who you just spent the last several minutes gushing about, to Matt Patricia, who we all know how that ended up working out in Detroit this year. Can you contrast the environment that you had with Jim Caldwell with what you experienced your last couple of years under Coach Patricia?
Yeah, it's totally different. You know, like I said, Coach Caldwell treated us like men and you know, respected us as players, as individual, as people. And I felt like Matt Patricia was the complete opposite. You know, he treated us like kids and, you know, disrespected everybody. You know, I felt like that's a huge, huge thing for him. And I can't say that that's how everybody in the, you know, the New England Patriot system is, but I think the thing that kind of gets, I don't know if Mr. Screwed from some of the Patriots assistants is, from what I've heard, you know, they see how Coach Belichick goes at Tom Brady, right? And they hold Tom Brady, well, used to go at Tom Brady and hold Tom Brady at a high standard, right? And that's one of the things that coaches feel like, hey, if I go at the top guy and make sure that I'm going at him, everybody else just kind of falls in line. The thing is, the relationship with Tom and Bill Belichick grew over the years. So when you're seeing Coach Belichick go at Tom Brady in year 13 or 14, that's 13 or 14 years of trust, a lot of games, a lot of practices, a lot of meetings. Their relationship is different. So you can't just come into an organization and feel like, okay, well, this is how he talked and treated Tom Brady, so this is how I'm going to talk and do our top guys. No, you have to work to build that relationship with your top guys so that you can have that type of communication with them. Because if you just come in and downing all your guys, well, then why, you're hurting their morale and the team, in my opinion. And so I think that's what Matt Patricia did, which was in stark contrast to what Coach Caldwell did. Coach Caldwell came in and basically built everybody up to feel like we were all superstars. And in turn, you know, we went out and played that way.
Mm-hmm. Glover, this situation in Houston with Deshaun Watson and the team, could you have seen this coming or anything approaching this level?
You know, I can't say that I could have saw it coming, because you would think that, you know, someone of Deshaun's caliber and what he means to the franchise, you know, you would think that they would at least make him feel like, you know, he's a part of the process. Even if they don't hire anybody that he endorses or anything like that. And that's if Deshaun is saying he wants to be a part of that. Some guys are just like, hey, I'm just a player. You know what? You guys are the front office. You go and hire who you want to hire. I'm going to focus on my job, and that's being a player, right? And then you have some guys who's like, yes, I am the quarterback. You know, I would like to have at least some say in who I would like to have as a head coach, or like to have as a position coach, or like to have, you know, as a GM. And like I said, you don't always have to do what these guys say, but just making them feel like their voice matters. Because when you say you want to do that and then you do the complete opposite, now it makes your franchise guy feel like, okay, my voice around here doesn't matter. Like, they're going to do whatever they want to do. They're going to tell me this and do whatever they want to do. So you start to lose the trust with your top guy. And when other players see that, if you do the top guy like this, well, then, heck, what are you doing to me? Well, I'm the 46th guy on the roster. You know, you definitely don't care about me if you don't care about Deshaun.
And really good insight from Glover Quinn, joining us, former Texan safety, former Lion safety. And you can get him on the gram at Glover Quinn on Instagram. You're not on Twitter, are you, Glover? You're just on the gram. That's where the kids are these days, over on the gram.
Yeah, I'm on the gram, man. I got off Twitter, you know, a couple years ago.
That's good.
I'm on the gram.
It's such a... But Twitter is such a warm and accepting and loving place. I just, you want to turn down that kind of, like, the oxytocin that comes with that?
Man, Twitter was fun. I had fun on Twitter. You know, it's a great platform, you know. But, yeah, I got off Twitter.
It's so great I got the hell out of there. Glover Quinn joining us. You can get him. Yeah, seriously, you can get him on Instagram at Glover Quinn. Glover, really good insight. Really appreciate that. And we'll do it again soon. Enjoy the conversation. Appreciate you making time.
Oh, yeah, man. Go Dirtbags. Baseball season started this weekend. Let's go.
Oh, that's right. You got kids playing baseball and stuff like that. I'm seeing the pictures right now. There it is. Glover, we appreciate it, man. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you.
There it is. Glover Quinn joining us on the show. Wow. Seth, if I'm a Texan fan, the part about the contrast between Jim Caldwell and Matt Patricia,
I find
to be harrowing.
Yeah, and that's – what about – honestly, this is how dumb these guys are. Some of these guys that come out of New England, like, well, Belichick treated Brady like crap, so I'm just going to waltz in here and treat Matt Stafford like crap without recognizing like everything that went into the relationship between Brady and Belichick. Oh, my God.
Well, let's talk about that, because Glover Quinn had a few things to say in that that are very, very relevant to the Texans. Glover Quinn joining us on the program. We'll recap some of what he had to say, particularly about that stark contrast between Patriot way and his experience with what who might be one of the leaders for the job right now. That's next. Payne and Pendergast with you. We just finished up with Texan safety, former Texan safety, former Lions safety, Glover Quinn.
His, what were you just listening to?
Was I just listening to?
Yeah. Oh, that wasn't your computer?
Was it my computer?
Mine. Whoops. Okay.
Hang on a second. No, wait. Oh, no, it was mine. You know what it was, Seth? You know what that was? That was Glover Quinn's YouTube channel.
Oh, okay. He's got a Glover Quinn. He's got a YouTube channel. That's right. I forgot he was doing that.
He's got a YouTube channel. You can get the link on the gram. We gave out his gram, so I feel good about that.
Sean, he sold me on Jim Caldwell, which I didn't expect to happen. I didn't wake up this morning thinking like, oh, well, yeah, Glover Quinn will make me feel really good about Jim Caldwell.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. We've heard a lot of people say positive things about Jim Caldwell, you know, both directly to us, just out there. Like, there's nobody that says bad things about Jim Caldwell that played for him. What in particular did you hear from Glover Quinn? Was it his tone, or was there anything that specifically he said about Caldwell that now has you feeling really, really good about Jim Caldwell, possibly?
I'm glad. You know what? I wish I could give you the direct quote, and I don't think I could, so I feel all right about it, because I really do think it was the tone in terms of him saying that guys really felt like this was a man that could unlock the best version of themselves. Yeah, Glover said something along those lines, like that really empowered them to. Oh, and then the other big thing, because this is one of my huge, huge, huge issues with NFL coaches. The common factor among really good NFL coaches, to me, has always been attention to detail. I think that, like, Dom Capers, when he was a defensive coordinator and really in his prime, when I was on a couple, like, when he was in Jacksonville with us and he was a really good defensive coordinator, I was blown away by the attention to detail, how important just minor inches were in alignment and all of that. I think Gary Kubiak, when I watched him coach offense, is just so absorbed in nailing all the minor details. So Glover Quinn talking about how the details are so important and everything needs to be so precise. And if you look and see what Jim Caldwell was able to do with Peyton Manning, who was already a good quarterback by that point, I'm not crediting him with creating Peyton Manning or anything. But also in just the fact that he got the absolute best out of Joe Flacco, that intrigued me, because honestly, I don't think Bill O'Brien's offenses really paid attention to detail.
No.
I thought they had some great ideas, but things looked sloppy all the time. So if what you want to do is hire the opposite of what you used to have, sometimes people think like, oh, you had an offensive guy, so now get a defensive guy, or oh, you had a player's coach, so now get an authoritarian. It can be as simple as, you know what, the last guy didn't really pay all that much attention to detail. Let's get somebody who's focused on details.
The part that I liked was, and Glover said it twice. He said it when he was praising Jim Caldwell. He said it again when we asked him about comparing the Caldwell era to the Matt Patricia era. What he said, Seth, was Jim Caldwell got the best version of guys.
He
was about building guys up, not about breaking them down. He was about treating them like adults, not treating them like kids. And I think back to Bill O'Brien, who would continually talk mediocrity and underperformance into existence, because he just didn't feel like he really believed in guys, if you want to know the truth. And I don't know if his message behind the scenes was different than his message to the media. But I do know this. There are not a lot of coaches that I watch in the media that sat there and just talked about what his guys couldn't do, or how hard it was to win, or how, boy, this is, you know, the league's basically just a coin flip league, and it's a play here and a play there. Yeah, we got it, Bill. We got it that it's a close league, that it's that, you know, the games come down to a play here or a play there. We don't need you to remind us each week. My guess is Jim Caldwell's not going to come in here and have a draft class full of rookies who are going to feel like they don't know what the hell they're doing, because the coach stands up in front of the media and says what idiots they are all the time.
Yeah.
That's my guess. And I think, look, there's some things about Bill O'Brien, Matt Patricia, anybody from the Patriots tree that if you paint them with the same brush, it might be unfair. You know, Bill O'Brien, you say, well, he'd give a bad answer at a press conference. They'd be like, well, he is a Belichick guy. At press conferences, Bill O'Brien wasn't anything like Bill Belichick. I thought O'Brien was very forthcoming and gave long answers a lot of times. I do feel like that how Glover Quinn described Patricia was a little bit like how Bill O'Brien was here, where he was way too much about the deficiencies in guys and working around that and trying to, you know, just trying to get cute and clever working with a bunch of tryhards as opposed to getting guys to be their best them on the field.
Yeah, and I do think that that's the problem with trying to copy the way that people operate in New England, and I think that's probably what's freaking Deshaun out a little bit. You're in danger in football whenever you start to think about all the non-football things too much.
Yeah.
And like guys like Jack Easterby who want to make things way more complicated and talk about culture and all this stuff. Like the only slogan that's ever really mattered in New England was do your job. And then work really hard at doing your job. And also, by the way, have a genius as your coach and an incredible player as your quarterback. And maybe fudge the rules every now and then. Yeah, that's a gray area.
Yes.
It's a gray area. It's a gray area, Sean. But it doesn't have to be about motivational slogans and redefining paradigms and thinking outside of the box. Think about, like, okay, the Kansas City Chiefs. What's the Kansas City Chiefs' secret? It's not some book that they read about how to design an organization. It's you got really smart football people and really good football players and pay attention to detail and then off you go. The New England Patriots, honestly, it's the same way. I'm just going through former Super Bowl champions. The Denver Broncos, I guess you get over the Seahawks, and Pete Carroll's got kind of a vibe about him, right? Like the extreme positivity and everything.
Yes.
So I'll give you the Seahawks. They kind of have like a defined and premeditated culture.
Text message, hey Sean, if the Super Bowl was a good guy contest, then I can believe the Texans can win it. There was nothing in the Glover interview that says Jim Caldwell is really good at the X's and O's and doing more with less. I'll say this. There's a reason I didn't ask, or Seth didn't ask Glover Quinn about X's and O's. Glover Quinn played safety for him. He didn't play quarterback. If we had Dan Orlovsky on, we would have asked about the X's and O's. And I can tell you, Texter, that I've talked to Dan Orlovsky about Jim Caldwell, and he has great things to say about Jim Caldwell as an X's and O's guy and as a nurturer of quarterbacks.
And this is, honestly, Texans fans should appreciate Jim Caldwell for this reason. The year the Ravens won the Super Bowl, do you remember when the Texans played the Ravens? They beat the snot out of the Ravens. They just crushed them. They crushed them. Partly, and it wasn't because the Texans' offense played awesome. It was because the Texans' defense just feasted on the Ravens, forced turnovers, tipped passes. It was disgusting.
J.J. had a pick six in that game. I remember it.
At that moment, Cam Cameron was the offensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens. Mid-season, they made Jim Caldwell the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, and they ended up going on a tear. And it was just, that was the difference. That was really the big difference that season, was that Cam Cameron was not as good as an offensive coordinator as Jim Caldwell. And off he went. By the way, and Jim Caldwell was the quarterback's coach this year for the Dolphins. It would be ironic if somehow that was the trade that ended up happening.
That would.
Yeah.
This might be the most important thing in this text, right? It's a simple text. Caldwell would repair the relationship with Deshaun Watson. Seth, we haven't heard from Watson directly. We've only heard rumblings. We have Glover Quinn's opinion of Jim Caldwell and a few other opinions that you and I have gotten along the way. Based on our limited knowledge of both sides of the situation, you know, Caldwell and Watson, do you feel like Jim Caldwell is somebody that Deshaun Watson would like, that whatever would need to get smoothed over, that Jim Caldwell could do that?
It seems like it, right? And I don't – Deshaun said – they needed a culture shift with the Texans. That's the big thing, right? So how much of the culture is the head coach specifically versus how much of it is the general manager, the owner, all of those other things, and Jack Easterby and whatever the hell he does. And that's what I wonder about is at this point, when Deshaun asked for a culture shift, or I shouldn't say he asked for it, he said the team needs a culture shift. They need one person they can look to. Is any head coach the Texans hire going to be somebody that Deshaun thinks can actually provide the focus and vision? Or is Jack Easterby really pulling the strings?
Right.
Jack Easterby talks a good game about being positive and whatnot, but all these reports of him sowing distrust don't seem like the most peaceful, positive, happy stuff. It seems like a guy that spits a good game but doesn't back it up with his actual actions within the organization. So I don't know at this point exactly how Deshaun's going to view everything. As long as – and Deshaun, look, Deshaun has not pointed at Jack Easterby specifically, but Jack Easterby is a big part of the Patriots' way that they keep trying to import down here.
This is another text. Sean, another mischaracterization of O'Brien. He did not tear down his players like Patricia. You guys act like these guys are ogres and not people trying to do their job with what they know, just like in real business. Let me respond to that. First of all, I did say I don't know what O'Brien is like behind the scenes. So I was only commenting on what we saw in press conferences and from what we know from talking to people about how O'Brien handles things. That's number one. So anything I commented on directly are all things from some things I've seen or heard. As far as you guys act like these guys are ogres, not people trying to, there it is, where it is, trying to do their jobs. I'll say this about O'Brien. I think he played favorites. And, you know, ask Kiki Cutie if he didn't tear guys down. You know what I mean?
Brandon Brooks is the guy that went on record.
Right.
You know, and players for the most part aren't going to rip coaches because it ends up hurting you. You get branded. Like, and it's interesting that Brandon Brooks just flat out said that he didn't even want to play football anymore when he was playing for Bill O'Brien because he was so miserable. And nobody really jumped on Brandon Brooks. I don't remember anybody jumping to Bill O'Brien's defense of when Brandon Brooks said that he made life absolutely miserable. So right. It's not it like supporting guys in the media publicly is one thing versus playing for the actual guy.
Yeah. All right. 713-572-4610. If you want to get in, one big reason I think Deshaun Watson had to be livid watching the NFL playoffs this weekend. That's next.
Allen, play fake, blitz is on. He throws, deep shot down the far right side. End zone, touchdown, Stephon Diggs.
Jackson, deep in the pocket. Now he steps up, tries to run. He's got some space. 45, 40, first down, 30's being chased. 20, 15, 10, will they get him? Jackson dives, and he's in. Touchdown, Lamar Jackson.
Quick throw up the middle, it's caught, grabbed by Landry, 30, makes it, tackle, miss at the 20, goes to the 10, runs to the far sideline, the 5, breaks on that tackle at the 2, runs into the end zone, touchdown.
All right, those were touchdowns from Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Baker Mayfield this past weekend. Picks 1, 7, and 32 in the 2018 NFL Draft. Meanwhile, in the 2017 NFL Draft, Patrick Mahomes, the 10th overall pick, was sitting at home on a bye week. Mitchell Trubisky, the number 2 overall pick, he lost, but he was playing in a playoff game, at least for the Chicago Bears. Meanwhile, the one prominent quarterback from those two draft classes, the two draft classes I would say that you would categorize right now as the bright young stars in the league, right? Guys who are in years 3 and 4 in the league. The one prominent quarterback who was sitting at home, well, sitting in Cabo, watching these games, was Deshaun Watson. And if I'm Deshaun Watson, I've got a lot of reasons to be angry right now. And I think this one, when you talk about these quarterbacks who are in that same chronological group, 2017, 2018 draft classes, if I'm Deshaun Watson and I look at this, it's a miracle that I haven't gotten as angry as I am right now before this, because you look at Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes, hell, Trubisky, who played in that playoff game. They've all had more resources. They've all had a better surrounding cast. They've all had a better head coach. They've all had a better general manager. Seth, I don't even know if I were Deshaun Watson, if I could watch the playoffs. I mean, I'm being serious. Like, I don't
right,
know if, without getting sick to my stomach.
Well, and I think I'm glad you laid it out this way, Sean, because look, there's a natural level of competition. I know that Mahomes and Deshaun are great friends and all that, but they're also competitors, you know, and Deshaun talks about wanting to be legendary. So the guys with whom he's going to be compared, you know, go back to the quarterback class. I just wanted to look something up, so I just looked up quarterback class of, and it popped in 1983. Yeah. Because those guys are always going to be compared to each other. Yeah. John Elway, Jim Kelly, Dan Marino, Tony Eason, Ken O'Brien, Todd Blackledge. those guys are always – that's so this general era, this 2017-2018 class, there might be some all-time Hall of Fame quarterbacks that came out of these 2 years. And right now, in terms of team success, Deshaun is trailing. You know, he's 1-1 against Josh Allen in the playoffs, but I think people feel a whole lot better about the direction of that football team than the Texans right this
moment.
Well,
Seth, think about the names I just gave, right? There were five names that I just gave. Of the five names that I just gave that were playing in playoff games, three of whom won a game and the other was sitting at home on a bye, the one name we can push to the side, Trubisky. He was a quarterback for an 8-8 team. They probably got there despite Trubisky, because of him.
He's your Todd Blackledge.
He's the Todd Blackledge, right. But Seth, the other names that I just mentioned, Josh Allen, Buffalo, Lamar Jackson, Baltimore, Baker Mayfield, Cleveland, Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City. These are all not only quarterbacks who are drafted in or around the same time as Deshaun Watson. Seth, they're all in the AFC, and they're all teams that have the green arrow pointed up. These are all teams that are ascending. Baker Mayfield, it looks like they've got it right now with Kevin Stefanski. Now, some of these guys are going to have to pay, and we'll see how that goes. Josh Allen, I think people feel like the arrow's certainly pointed up in Buffalo. They might go to the Super Bowl. Lamar Jackson in Baltimore finally broke through and won a playoff game. I think people feel like the arrow's always pointed up in Baltimore, right? I mean, they've got a culture where they're perennially, it seems like, in the mix, or they're at least very well respected when they're not in the postseason picture. And then Mahomes is the quarterback for the best team in football right now. Seth, it's not just that these are quarterbacks that are around Deshaun's age. It's not just that these are quarterbacks whose teams have given them every resource and every reason to believe that they have been set up for success moving forward. From a practical standpoint, these are all quarterbacks in the same conference with Deshaun Watson.
Yeah,
he's got to get through these guys to get to the Super Bowl if he's playing for the Houston Texans.
So if I hear you correctly, what you're saying is Deshaun is agitating for a trade to Green Bay.
Yeah, or anywhere in the NFC. That's pretty sad, right? He probably...
Because we were talking about, like, okay, he has a no-trade clause, so Deshaun doesn't have to just take a trade to, I don't know, what would the dreg of the NFC right now be? But they...
Probably Detroit.
Yeah, I guess
Atlanta.
Detroit, yeah.
Philadelphia.
That's got to be a big part of it, just psychologically. And that's where he can look at, you know, ironically enough, Aaron Rodgers. Like, Aaron Rodgers was starting to go down that road. He's 37 years old. Until the last, you know, those last couple of years under Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers' numbers were not all that good. It was really starting to look like, oh, wow, you know what? Aaron Rodgers might not be this guy that plays until he's 40.
Right.
And it changed 100% totally and completely with a change of coach. So I think that Deshaun probably sees that and realizes it.
Here's the thing. The rumor, and again, this is pure rumor, but we know that Schefter talked about a trade to the Dolphins. And I don't know how substantial that is, but I'll say this about Deshaun Watson. As you and I kind of sit here and jokingly say, well, which team in the NFC does he probably want to go to? Because look at Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, Mayfield. Wow, the AFC. My guess is the way Deshaun Watson is wired, he would want to approve a trade to an AFC team because he's a competitive guy. I think Deshaun loves the idea of competing with Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. I think he loves that idea. I think he feels like he's trying to do it right now with a piano strap to his back.
Well, and that's where I'm glad that there is a report that Deshaun would hypothetically be okay with a trade to Miami. Because if that is true, that means that it's not just the Patriots way that Deshaun objects to, per se, or at least Patriots exports. Like, Deshaun is savvy enough and smart enough to understand that, look, Brian Flores may have spent his entire career in New England, but the environment down there isn't that kind of Patriots way type of environment. Where up here it has been. And in that, it just, I get the sense that that freaks him out a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's cool that which leads to potentially, hey, Caserio can convince Deshaun that this next head coach candidate, you know, depending on who he is, look, this is not a Belichick, Matt Patricia, Bill O'Brien type of guy. It's going to be a different environment. It's going to be something where people are actually going to be themselves instead of trying to replicate the New England way.
Boy, it is a really, really key hire. And as you pointed out, Seth, boy, I hope that Caserio follows through on his promise to involve Deshaun in this thing.
You know, this is the thing about trying to export the Patriots way. A lot of times people think about, okay, well, you're going to be cutthroat. Maybe you treat your quarterback a certain way. And O'Brien didn't treat Deshaun the way Belichick treats Brady.
Right.
So I'll give Bill O'Brien credit for that. And I think this really, in a lot of ways, I think this is really Deshaun caring about his teammates and having the best environment for his teammates to thrive. But Jack Easterby, you know, hey, everything's awesome all the time, right? That positive, glowy outlook, it kind of masks the other stuff that Jack Easterby has brought, which is completely and totally the Patriots way. This people being paranoid all the time, people just constantly not knowing, you know, like who's at risk, who's on whose side, all that stuff. That stuff that goes on with the Patriots too. And the reports are that Jack Easterby sows a lot of that distrust.
Yeah.
He creates division. And it's almost by design. It works with Bill Belichick at the helm. I don't know if it works with any other human being at the helm, you know, that way. That's the real danger in thinking you're going to replicate some of the Patriots' way anywhere else.
My guess is you know where you stand with Bill Belichick. I mean, you cannot like his personality and you cannot like how cutthroat the environment might be. My guess is there's not ambiguity. Toxic positivity inherently comes with ambiguity when it's a person in a position of authority. It's inherent. You know, if you're this inherently positive person that's, hey, buddy, all the time, and yet you're in a position where you've got influence to hire and fire people, then you operate in an ecosystem that's all about ambiguity.
Humans hate that. It's almost like if Jack Easterby were a coach, if he actually knew something about football and he were a coach, it would actually be a little less problematic, because at the very least he's also the guy making decisions on playing you or cutting you or what have you. But Jack Easterby is the guy who to your face is like, hey, tell me about your problems, isn't life awesome? But then behind the scenes is whispering in Bill O'Brien's ears. People don't trust that guy,
right?
You're a Mr. Smithers at that point. You know, like nobody in Springfield trusts Mr. Smithers, even though at his heart and core, Mr. Smithers is, he seems like he wants to be a good dude. But the problem is he's always going to do Mr. Smithers, Mr. Burns' bidding.
Yeah.
And so like Jack Easterby is like a bastardized version of Smithers.
Smithers was very attracted to Mr. Burns, too. I always found that a little bit weird. Yes.
Is there tension there?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
oh, there is? Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I never knew that. I guess I missed that episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the show's been on for like 32 years, so I haven't watched all 32 years. I do remember an era of Simpsons where Smithers had sort of a creepy infatuation with Mr. Burns.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't think that. Well, obviously, Easterby wasn't like that with Bill O'Brien. He got him. Maybe he was at some point, but he got the hell rid of him.
Let's go.
By the way, if anybody from the Texans upper brass is listening right now, this is what you need to understand about perception being reality. You might not think that Jack Easterby has as much control as I think he does, but to people on the outside looking in, Jack Easterby showed up. Within a couple months, Brian Gain was gone. 18 months later, Bill O'Brien was gone. Jack Easterby is still standing. You know, who's got the power there? People do the math right quick. They hear the stories about Jack Easterby, and it sure as hell seems like Jack Easterby has a whole lot of power.
Well, and if they're distraught about it, they've got nobody to blame but themselves, because the dude never does interviews. He never speaks about any of this stuff.
Because he's not that good at it. And he also crafts messages like, hey, as we introduce a general manager who we just hired from New England, we're going to tell you that, no, this is not Patriots South.
Right.
Like, well, I'm sorry. Right. Geography would tell me that it is.
Yeah.
Like simple logic would tell me that it is, but all right. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's a Jack Easterby statement. You know, Jack Easterby writes these PR statements and crafts these messages, and he's awful at it. It's yet one more thing. For all these people that say that Jack Easterby is good at so many things, he continually shows us evidence that he is not good at anything.
I need one thing. Just one
thing.
Yeah,
just give me one thing that he's good at. In Houston, don't tell me the joyful stories about the people he helped in New England. Tell me about what he's good at in Houston.
That's right. Let's go to Sugar Land and get Dylan in here. Dylan, you are up on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'll tell you guys how much power Jack Easterby has. It sounds like maybe you missed the Pro Football Talk story from Sunday, but right here it says that the Texans had offered Omar Khan the job at the recommendation of Corn Ferry when at the behest of Easterby, they suddenly pivoted to Nick Caserio and hired him. And now Jamie Roots has talked about resigning and has been talked out of resigning, that Easterby went to Bob McNair's house one night and talked to him and then got a call from Easterby and Casario's agent.
Yeah, no, hey, Caserio, Dylan, we laid that story all out yesterday. What are your thoughts on it?
I mean, it's just, it's crazy that, because when Caserio first got hired, right, you were like, oh, we've been bamboozled. There was no search. It was all just planning on hiring Caserio, right?
Yep.
Well, it looks here like, no, they searched. They were planning on doing it. They were planning on hiring the guy that Corn Ferry recommended. And then all of a sudden, Easterby swoops in and gets them to hire Caserio. How are they listening to this guy?
Yeah,
it's the million-dollar question, and it's that as the entire league and people in Houston scream, "What the hell is this Jack Easterby guy?" And even when people ask direct questions about what it is that Jack Easterby does so well, there doesn't seem to be an answer other than that he has a really good way of sidling up to people and getting them to trust his opinion. It happened to Bill O'Brien, you know? Like, O'Brien was hook, line, and sinker for it. I mean, somebody told me that Bill O'Brien didn't even realize that Jack Easterby might have been part of his ouster until weeks after Bill O'Brien had been fired.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's how completely and totally and fully – He convinces people. I think he gets them into some kind of a warp zone where he feels like he's got the answers to all their questions. And he puts people into like almost a hypnotic trance where they'll recite things without explaining them over and over again. And I say it again and again. I still have yet to hear an answer about what Jack Easterby does well, other than he has good people skills. Like, it's driving me slowly insane. I can't express to you how much I dread hearing somebody ask the question, tell me what Jack Easterby does as well, because I know the answer is going to be, he does so many things so well, and a lot of them are people skills related. Like, okay, like that's you try to give that answer in a job interview, and you're giving a horrible job interview.
Yeah. Oh. Well, you just answered your own question. It's to what he's good at. Unfortunately, it's not something that if I were the team, I would brag about him being good at.
Do you know what it is? Hey, what is Jack Easterby good at? I'll tell you what, he bamboozles the hell out of a person. On the scale of bamboozlement, he is in a 12 out of 10. It is incredible.
His boozle meter.
Booty got me like, bamboozle got me like.
The Easter boozy boodle meter.
You got bamboozled like an onion because it's going to make me cry.
Let's drop one more in here. Marcus is on the southwest side. Marcus, you're on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
How you doing, guys? Hey, I'm on the other end of this. I mean, Tom McNair is the owner. Even though he did hire this company and then there was interviewing this guy, Omar Khan, at the end of the day, it's still his decision on who he wants to hire to run the team. And they've been chasing this Caserio guy for a while, so I don't see what the issue is. And also with Deshaun Watson.
Go ahead.
Yeah, also with Deshaun Watson being upset about them hiring this GM. The GM needs to know about trade value. The GM, it runs the organization, put the team together. What do Deshaun Watson know about that? If this was hiring the coach, that'd be a different story.
Okay, Marcus, appreciate the phone call. Go ahead, Seth.
Yeah, both good points. I'll start with the second one first. For one, okay, are you so absolutely certain that Texans know what they're looking for as they hire their third GM in 3 years, as they got charged with tampering when they tried to get Nick Caserio a year and a half ago? All of those things. And Deshaun hasn't said that he wanted to hand pick the general manager. Deshaun was told that he would have input into the process. I also think that Deshaun asked for a culture shift. He very specifically asked for a culture shift. The Texans doubled down on more of the Patriots South culture. So it's not as much about, hey, Deshaun seeing if a guy's going to be able to handle the salary cap or whatnot. It's a little bit more nuanced and all that. Now, as far as the owner wanting to do what he's going to do, I'll tell you this. People are very distrustful of Jack Easterby. People in the organization are distrustful of Jack Easterby, according to that Sports Illustrated report, which I have reason to believe is factually accurate throughout. So people are mistrustful of Jack Easterby. Those other GM candidates reportedly all told Cal that they were going to fire Jack Easterby if they got the job. So when Jack Easterby swoops in, and when Jack Easterby has been part and parcel to the last 18 months, starting with firing Brian Gain, failing at hiring Nick Caserio, getting charged with tampering, leading to an 18-month period where he had no GM at all, and some of the worst trades in the history of football, that guy is the guy that steered Cal McNair back towards somebody that wouldn't fire Jack Easterby. That's where you get the sense and the feeling that the owner does not actually have control of the team, that Jack Easterby may as well be the owner of the team. And to recap what I just told you, Jack Easterby has sucked at his job for the last 18 months. And Texans fans, yes, Cal McNair is the owner. Texans fans are the customers. Just like the owner of a restaurant does not have to put out crappy food and expect people to show up and eat. Cal McNair can be the owner all he wants. If the customer thinks that they're eating crappy food, they're going to stop eating it.
You can arrive at the right hire and still do it via a process that crushes the souls of everybody inside the building over there. That is what I'll say. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and good decisions to you.
Okay, it's the same to you, my friend. All right, we're done. We're back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. John Lopez, Cody Stutes in again today. Figgy Fig, of course. They're up next in the loop. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.